Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Second half just underway at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Chelsea leading Spurs by 1-0. A Jorginho penalty midway through the first half. Now we're going to be talking about Liverpool against Man City in some detail with Kevin Doyle, former Republic of Ireland striker, in a moment. But firstly, let's hear from Caoimhe O'Neill from the Liverpool Echo, who was talking about Liverpool's pretty perilous title situation after they went 7 points behind Man City this week.
It'll define Liverpool's season. If they win it, then okay, you know, there's still 15 games to go after that, and, you know, crazier things can happen. But if they lose, then you're kind of then worrying about, you know, top four, and that becomes Liverpool's reality. It probably already is Liverpool's reality, but maybe we don't want to accept that just yet. And I just think, you know, I think if you look at the team last night, it kind of explains the performance in a way. I mean, James Milner has played back-to-back games, you know, as much as he's, you know, 35-year-old who just won't stop running for you. You know, he took a knock in the first half and he did look a little bit leggy throughout the game. I don't know, maybe you do what you've done against West Ham for Klopp and bring Curtis Jones on sooner, bring that little bit of energy and, you know, the cheekiness what he brings to the pitch. But it just seemed even the subs failed to make an impact. If Okereke, I can't really remember him doing anything with the ball. Oxlade-Chamberlain was trying, but he just seemed to, you know, kept losing the ball. And, you know, fair play to Brighton. They were just there like a blockade and surrounding the ball. He was swarming everywhere. It felt like there was 20 of them on the pitch at times. And Liverpool just looked, I don't know, lacking in energy and lacking in confidence, which is bizarre because, as I've mentioned, those two games were massive for that and they boosted the whole fan base. The team would have been feeling good going into it. But then, you know, that result happens and it feels like we're kind of back to square one again.
Caoimhe O'Neill, who was writing about last night's defeat for Liverpool against Brighton for The Athletic, speaking on OTB AM. 68 games, Liverpool had turned Anfield into a fortress in the Premier League. Now back-to-back home defeats against Burnley and Brighton. Kevin Doyle is with us now. Kevin, how are you getting on?
I'm good, thanks.
Better probably than Liverpool fans are feeling at the moment, I think, after what's happened with these two games. Because, yeah, Liverpool have been a bit sluggish. Even Jurgen Klopp was saying that. They look tired, both mentally and physically. But these are two, you know, big defeats in terms of trying to defend their Premier League crown, because you would have had these down on paper as two home victories for Liverpool.
Yeah, like you wouldn't have expected the two games. The games we're going to lose at home, as you said, first time in 68 to beat Burnley and then Brighton. They've actually, like, they weren't playing great before Christmas. They looked like they turned the corner. They had a good start, a good January, and they were playing well. Last night, it reminded me a bit of like Manchester United against Sheffield United last week. A bit, you know, they expected to win there at home, you know, just come out and play the game, get it over with, look forward to Man City at the weekend. I don't know if it was tiredness or that taking it for granted. You have to give, like, they're the champions, a fantastic squad, but there's a few little issues going on behind the scenes with contracts. If you watch Brighton's goal, if you watch it from the start, Brighton played, Liverpool worked quite hard, looked to close them down and help the pitch, but they were always half a yard off. You know, whether that's tiredness or not being up for the game or whatever, you'd have to think it's tiredness because they are champions. They're up for every game. The reason they're champions because these games they're able to win. But they just looked half a yard. Brighton played out from the back really well, in fairness to them. Really good performance from them. They're really organized. They played a bit like Liverpool. They pressed high as well, but they played out from the back for the goal. Excellently. Liverpool did their usual, try to close high up the pitch, but they weren't. Everyone has to be at it. When you're playing like that and you're pressing high up the pitch, every player has to be 100% committed, full of energy, the way Liverpool have done for a number of years. And if you watch that open the start, they weren't. There was a few players off. Thiago got caught way ahead of the ball. again, he's another player's question marks, whether he's a fantastic player, don't get me wrong on that, but whether he suits that high press and high energy game that Liverpool play and have played for a long time. And it means the goal, the actual defence wasn't good for the goal. When it got down the pitch, when Brighton did get down the pitch, cross in, it was lazy centre half. I think it was Phillips got caught sort of spinning the wrong way, trying to clear it. But actually, you know, Liverpool don't usually get to that stage. They win the ball high up the pitch. And when you see how Brighton got out, if you watch from the start, it wasn't the Liverpool that we've known that have won the Premier League and won it convincingly.
Yeah, because I think when Thiago became available, Kevin, in the summer, it was one that, you know, top clubs weren't going to pass up if the chance came to sign him, because he's been so impressive for Bayern Munich over the last six or seven seasons, culminating in being a key member of their Champions League winning team when Project Restart got up and running again last summer. So the chance was there for Liverpool to put a different option into their midfield. But what some of their supporters appear to be a bit annoyed about is that Thiago has come into a team who used to play this kind of heavy rock football that Klopp liked to play, which meant moving the ball through the midfield pretty quickly. He does slow things down a little bit, even if he's going to help you retain the possession or maybe play a different type of football through midfield. He's not quite fit in there just yet.
No, listen, it's not easy to come into a team who are the champions, who won the Champions League the year before, who were a top squad to come in. I know he's a top player, to a different style of play, totally different to what he'd been used to at Bayern Munich. I think, and I still think he could be a fantastic signing for Liverpool in different games. You know, Liverpool, the one thing they struggled with when teams sat deep against them and they needed to be a bit calmer and a bit more patient. They couldn't win the ball high up the pitch and break or counter-attack, because some of the teams in the Premier League would just, you know, figure it out a bit and were sitting deep and made it very difficult. Thiago was sort of that sign to come in, you know, a bit more patient, find that tread of true ball type player when they had a lot more possession. You know, he hasn't quite hit the ground running. Again, I go back to that goal last night and you sort of see why. When Liverpool go to press and most of the players are on the same wavelength, and only takes one, maybe two, to be not on that wavelength and it breaks down, their press is pointless. It's a wasted energy. It's, you know, 11 players have to be doing it. And he just did this, and I don't want to be picking on him. But in that, if you watch that go from the start, he makes a run forward ahead of the ball from his sort of deep line midfield position. The breaks down and he takes a long time to get back. And he does get back and he does try to get back, but he doesn't have the legs of Liverpool players, you know, of Jordan Henderson, who's able to cover the ground, who does it at pace, who knows, you know, who's Harry's, wins the ball back to the Liverpool that we're used to watching. He's not that type of player. You know, he's not. And he's a fantastic player in his own right, but he's not type, as you said, that rock and roll type, win the ball back, go again, Liverpool end to end, exciting to watch. He's more of a Man City type player, to be honest with you.
I think Liverpool's
and
system
being world class.
Liverpool system's been a bit hurt as well, Kevin, by the injuries at the back. Like, no one can really legislate for the amount of defensive injuries they've had in the one area across the centre of their defence. But you have to rob from one area of the pitch if you're moving Fabinho and Henderson back in at centre-back to try and cover for injuries on top of injuries. Even taking out, you know, the confidence that Virgil van Dijk gives to be able to push higher up the field when you know you've got the best defender in world football around. But also moving Henderson out of midfield when he was so good last year, having to put Fabinho in at centre-back, harms their midfield as well.
Yeah, it does. Listen, it was very unlucky for them, very unfortunate. Listen, you can accept losing one, but they've lost two of their starting back four, two exceptional players. And obviously, Virgil van Dijk, player of the year, and so outstanding since he came there. It's a tough one, and you can't replace that. And to have to take Jordan Henderson, who himself, you know, was one of the players of the year last year from centre midfield to play centre half, it's not ideal. That's why I'm surprised. I know they signed Ben Davies. I thought, you know, they had a lot of time. They know Van Dijk is out. They had a lot of time to get, I suppose, a more established player in there, centre half, that could come straight in and you'd be happy to start him straight away. And they haven't. I thought they'd strengthen in the window. I really did. I think they need a freshen up. In a few, you know, bring in Origi. Origi's done well for them and scored some late goals, but, you know, you'd expect them to have someone, you know, more substantial, I think, to come off the bench. I thought they would have signed a big player. It's very difficult. It's easy for me to sit here and say that. It's very difficult to go and get these players in a very strange transfer window as it was. But I did think they'd strengthen more than they have done. They're very similar. You know, they've added bits and pieces, but very similar squad over the last 3 or 4 years. And maybe it's just, you know, coming to the end and time to renew again. You know, with not coming to the end, they're fantastic players still, but Salah's out talking, you know, rumours of him wanting to move. Wijnaldum has been brilliant for them. He's out of contract. It really does look like he's leaving at the end of the season. So it's sort of a change of the guard for them, and maybe time to sign a few players this summer and sort of go again. But not, you listen, I wouldn't still be surprised if they beat Man City this weekend. And I suppose they're not going for this. I really don't think they're going for the title now. I think it's just, you know, get through the season and be in the top four, and they'll be happy enough at this stage.
Mo Salah is an interesting situation as well, Kevin, because he's been vocal enough about the fact that he knows his last big contract is coming up. I get the impression he wants to stay at Liverpool. That would be his first preference. But he knows he's got one last chance to get paid. Even with a season where people have been complaining about his form, he's still the top scorer in the Premier League. We saw against West Ham last Sunday night the type of goals that he can score for Liverpool. There is a feeling there that with everything he's done for Liverpool over the last couple of years, that the club should just get him down, tie him down to a contract, even if it's going to cost them quite a bit to keep him. What would you do? Because if they are going to let him go, this summer they'd have to consider offers if there's any coming in.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one again, because to keep, so they've won the Champions League with him. He's been their best player. They've won the Premier League. He's been their best player. So the best player in arguably the best league in the world, he'll be arguing I should be one of the highest paid players in the world. And Liverpool, I don't think, are the club who are going to make him that player. So, you know, and rightly so, he has that argument. You know, he's been fantastic for them. You know, even this season where he hasn't been quite on it, you see his performance against West Ham, his goals, he's their top scorer. You know, it's a really, really difficult one for Liverpool. If they give Mo Salah that contract, then they've set another ceiling where they have to go to a player to... But I suppose they've got clubs in the world, that's what they're going to have to pay if they want to keep him. But they've had history of moving players on. You know, they kept Suarez for that extra season. Got a lot of money from him. It was good once he left Liverpool. Coutinho got a lot of money for him. Klopp seems to be able to be happy enough to get the best out of players, know the right time to move them on and be able to replace them. So if I was a Liverpool fan, I'd be delighted if he stayed, but it also wouldn't be the end of the world if they've got a manager, I think, who's able to get players and improve them and make them. Mo Salah wasn't the player he was before he came to Liverpool. I really think they had a big part in getting them to that level. So it's a tough one for Liverpool to do. They want to be seen as the big club and keeping that sort of player, but also maybe the time is right to cash in and go for the next one.
Sometimes you have to be pragmatic. You look at Coutinho leaving, it funded Van Dijk and Alisson coming into the club, and they massively reinforced two positions for the sake of losing one player. I wonder as well, Kevin, when you look around Europe, and look, Salah is probably going to find it difficult to get a club to pay the money that will be required. Barcelona are nearly $1 billion in debt. Real Madrid aren't exactly flush with cash at the moment. This recession has hit the pockets of the giant clubs across Europe. But I was just thinking about the giant clubs across Europe too. When you look at Liverpool's fall off from the level that they were at, Atletico Madrid, top of the league at the moment, 10 points clear with the game in hand. AC Milan, Inter Milan at the top of the table in Serie A, Juventus off the pace a little bit. PSG are currently third in Ligue 1, and Lille are sitting top of the French League. It gets to a point where I suppose some of those teams who played nearly around the calendar year last year because of the restart, their form has dropped off this season, and we're probably going to see a few unusual league winners emerge in the big leagues in Europe.
Yeah, possibly. It's nice. It's a nice change. It's something to break up the, I suppose, the norm, something to give other clubs a chance. Top teams have played the most games as normal, but the usual squads are there to deal with. They haven't, players haven't had a chance to, I suppose, recharge and break and go again. I don't know the day-to-day protocols of the clubs and the top clubs and the European games and the travel and the quarantine and you know, what it's like with all, you know, especially when you're playing European games, flying back to, say, England, for example, and having to play a Premier League every weekend. What, you know, I don't know what the detail is, whether you're allowed to go see your family or you have to stay in a hotel. I'd imagine it's quite mentally tiring. It's quite training for the top players at the top clubs. Doesn't matter what you're getting paid. It's a weird circumstance. You know, it would be easier for clubs who maybe aren't at the top at the moment, who aren't playing in so many games. I've had a bit more chance. You listed some of those teams there. Maybe that is what has happened. But not easy. But then, you know, any of the top four or five in any of those leagues are in the same scenario. And they've come well in the same scenario. Liverpool could come out the other side of it now. So I suppose you can come up with theories and reasons and excuses, but you know, a lot of them have, as I said, have the same situation. The biggest squads, Liverpool's squad isn't as big as Man City's. And that's, you know, who they're bringing on off the bench. You look at Man City's bench and this season, I think that it's a big thing for them. Man United's bench, it's a really strong squad. They've got great players. I don't think Liverpool had the depth, that strength and depth, and it has really hit them this season, as we've seen.
Timo Werner is just really struggling for form at the moment. Thomas Tuchel has his head in his hands. Werner is played right through the middle of the Spurs box, gets past the penalty spot, looks like it's going to be a simple finish, decides to try and take the letter off the ball, and he's put it over the crossbar. So Chelsea continue to lead against Spurs by 1-0. That's something we were talking about a little bit earlier on with John Giles, Kevin, about just sometimes strikers get into a funk and it seems they snatch at chances and anything that they shoot at goal seems to go wide or hit the woodwork as opposed to going in. From your own experience as a striker, is that something that happens that sometimes you feel like you're just in the groove and everything you hit is going to go in and then you have these periods where it proves very difficult to score?
Yeah, definitely. You're in a rhythm. Watching Timo Werner, that penalty last week that he missed near the end of the game and he placed that one in there. And I'm thinking, just put your laces through this one, Timo. Keep your head down, put your laces through, and he's placed it, keeper saved it. You just haven't seen he's missed there now. You're saying he has gone to put his laces through and driven it over the bar. I feel sorry for just on the Timo Werner point. He's moved to England right in a difficult time. I can imagine any player coming from a foreign country into England this summer was really difficult, you know, trying to get your family and settle in the middle of this pandemic and that side of things. So I'd imagine his personal life is probably really disrupted more than normal, and maybe that's had a part to play in how he struggled to settle in England. He looks an energetic, he looks a good player, he just can't put the ball in the net at the moment. And I really do, it's happened to me, it happens to every striker, it happened to me plenty of times. You go through a spell where anything you can hit just goes in, it's easy, the game is so easy, you don't have to think about it, everything comes natural, and then the opposite happens, and it doesn't come natural, and you overthink. You overanalyze, maybe you try, which is strange, but you try too hard and nothing you hit goes in. You snatch, you look up to see where your shot's gone before you shoot, you know, all your technique goes out the window. And in Werner's case, it looks to be an extreme case of that. His technique, you know, he looks like a really bad player, and he's not. You've watched clips of him. He's a really good player, but since he's gone to Chelsea, he's just been totally out of form and out of rhythm. Hasn't gone into it at all. But, you know, get one goal or two and it changes. It's amazing how quickly it can change. And that's what you just have to keep believing. You have to keep saying to yourself, you're in training, you know, you're missing chances in training and it's annoying you when it never bothered you before. And you just have to keep going, keep training your best, keep doing the right things. You know, it's worked for you in the past and you have to believe it'll work for you in the future.
Yeah, and with 28 Bundesliga goals last year, this is a player who can clearly go on a run of scoring as he did with RB Leipzig. If you were in a week, Kevin, where say you've had a bad game on the Saturday and you've missed a few chances, would it play in your mind outside of the match during the week, or were you good at being able to just kind of brush it off and go about your business after that?
I think I was quite good at it. Listen, you get reminded of it plenty of times. You go out and you're in the supermarket or you're filling your car up with pet or whatever it might be, and someone will walk along beside you. And especially when you're playing in England or Premier League, whatever, everyone's seen it and they'll remind you pretty quick. Or if you haven't scored in a few games, there'll be someone wanting to give you a little niggle, and you get used to it. You deal with it. It's your job. It's your life. You're used to it from a young age. From when you first start being a striker all the way up along, you have dry spells and good spells, and you get programmed to switching off. Because you won't have a long career if you really let it get you and affect you. You have to be able to switch off. You have to know, I suppose, you know, have great self-belief and be able to go into training and keep going and not shy away from it. The best I've seen at missing chances and getting another chance, and as if he'd never missed a chance in life, was Robbie Keane. To be honest, he could miss, and he didn't miss too many, but he could have a bad game, miss loads of chances, and he didn't care if it was the 89th minute. He'd still be desperate to get the next chance, to take the next penalty. Plenty of things I admire, but the main thing I admired about Robbie was his ability to go again and not care what other people thought or how many he'd missed. It's a skill in itself. It just doesn't come naturally. I think you work at it. And it's a team of Werner is class. It will come back to him, but it mightn't be Chelsea. He might have to move on, but I hope it is Chelsea. He looks like a genuine good player. He tries. He's working his socks off. He is running around. Just he can't even control the ball at the moment. He won the penalty tonight. Little things like that can kick into gear, winning that penalty. It'd be nice to see him take it himself, but after missing it last week, obviously he didn't fancy it.
Yeah, football, of course, on Off the Ball, thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. Just thinking of Aaron Connolly this week when it comes to snatching at chances too. It's kind of been a difficult second season for Aaron in a way at Brighton, because last year he bursts onto the scene and scores some terrific goals, and he's getting so much praise from Graham Potter. Potter then brings in Danny Welbeck. Connolly has maybe missed a few chances along the way. He's now got big competition to even get into the team at Brighton. and misses a big chance last week, gets a lot of stick for it, which was the horrible side to it. Yeah. But it must suck for Aaron Connolly, because again, he's getting into the right positions, but he's just fluffing a few of his chances along the way, which is understandable when he's still only a kid.
Yeah, and he's another one who doesn't seem to get a running. He seems to always, I don't know, maybe I'm imagining this, but he seems to get a lot of niggles, a lot of injuries. He seems to, you know, be just about playing well, and he get an injury and have to come off, getting into a run of form, or getting the team, score a good goal, and then he picks up an injury. He has fantastic talent. I think he, you know, he can be a really good player. Second season is definitely the hardest. You know, it's easy. No one expects that in last season. It's great, and you get in the Ireland squad, and everyone's telling you you're brilliant. And then the next season, you sort of have to go and do it, you know, live up to it. I watched his chance and his or so-called bad miss against Spurs last week. And if you watch it, he actually does everything right. He makes, you know, great movement, gets into position, and he doesn't scuff his chance. He doesn't balloon. He could have ballooned it over the bar or done all the things that make it. People are saying it's a terrible miss. He got great contact with it. Too good. If he'd have scuffed it, they'd gone in. He got great contact with it, did all the right things. Just, I'm not sure which Spurs defender happened to slide in and get a good block on it. Listen, he didn't realise he had as much time. He could have maybe took a touch and just rolled it in, but he didn't. I've seen a way a lot worse misses than that. The worst misses than that myself, where, you know, you sky that over the bar or it bubbles under your foot or whatever. I don't think it was as bad as people made out to be. He's just tried to concentrate and get a, he just thinks he needs to get a clean strike on it as a goal. And the first defender managed to gamble and block it. And I don't think it was the end of the world. I don't think it should affect him. If it affects him that much, he's not going to have a long career as a professional. He should be able to get over that quite quickly and realize, listen, my technique was good. I did all the right things. On another day, that'll be a goal.
Yeah, he seems a very confident lad. I mean, understandably, he wanted to get off social media with the abuse he was receiving. But that's oftentimes, you know, someone who has a few quid on the game and then decides to have a go at the guy who missed a chance. Yeah. But he'll bounce back from that, I've no doubt.
Yeah, he should, like, getting off the social media thing, whatever. Again, you know, what's the point? You know, just turn it off, turn your phone off for a few weeks. You know, it's like a big, you know, big deal then all of a sudden, and people make a bigger thing out of it and talk about it. You know, just forget about it. Don't look at your social media if that affects you that much. Or don't be on social, if you're a professional sports person and if missing a chance, you're always going to get, you're a sports person, you have to accept you're going to get abused. It's just the world we live in. You're going to get abused. You're going to get plenty of praise when you play well. You get abused, you don't play well. And if you're going to have a long career and if it's going to affect you, don't be on social media or realize that that's just the way it is and be on it and just accept it. When you have a bad game, don't look at it for a week and it'll filter out of your system or your timeline or whatever it is in Twitter, I think was it, you came off. So just, you know, it's, you know, I think by doing stuff like that, and he's young and he can understand how I got a bit of view and just turn on getting rid of Twitter, but he'll probably be back on Twitter again in a week or two and have a new account. But just that's the side of immaturity that you realize as you get a bit older, you know, just, you know, people are allowed, unfortunately or fortunately, you're a sports person, people aren't paying money to go to games, but it's football and it's passion and people are, you know, you want their team to win or whatever it might be. So you just have to accept you will get plenty of abuse, but you get plenty of plaudits and you get well paid for it, as long as it's not any threatening or anything like that. You just have to accept that's part of being a professional sports person. And don't let it get you. Don't make it, by making a deal out of it and doing what he did, it just brings more focus on it, I think.
Yeah, with the nature of things, with the World Cup qualifiers coming up at the middle of next month, everyone has started to look at the Irish players currently and where goals might come from the team. And again, this is where we probably put pressure on these young teenage players who are coming through, because, yeah, you know, Adam Ida is just coming back from an injury with Norwich. It's difficult for him to get back and running because Norwich have been going so well. They play Swansea tomorrow and could go well clear in the Championship. Troy Parrott, didn't happen for him at Millwall, got an injury when he first went there. Manager didn't fancy him through the middle. He's now gone to Ipswich for the rest of the season. I would imagine as Irish supporters, we're just hoping that both Ida and Parrott get plenty of game time between now and the end of the campaign.
Yeah, you know, and Troy Parrott was, you know, such a positive hope I suppose it's nearly 18 months ago now. And all these players need time. They need to play games. They need to get a run of confidence. And none of them have really played a whole lot for Ireland. Aaron, out of all of them, I would be most excited about Aaron Connolly at the moment. I really do think he has great potential, an exciting player to watch. Troy, I've seen some goals from him. I haven't seen too many games of playing 90 minutes and watching his all-round play. I hear and I've been told he's exceptional, but, you know, he hasn't played a whole lot. You can't see that change in between, you know, between that and between now and qualifiers, and you can't see that change. And Adam Ida did okay in the games he played, tough games for Ireland and difficult for him so early, but I think he did fine and he showed some good touches and build-up play. You just like to like them to have looked more of a goal threat. Shane Long's gone on loan to Bournemouth. So, you know, in the Championship, maybe Shane can hit the ground running there and get a run of goals and get back where he was a few years ago and be an option again, be a fantastic option if he did for Ireland. It's not ideal at the moment, no. It's probably as low a point striker-wise as it's been in a long time. But, you know, it can turn quickly if a few of them get going. So that Aaron gets going, can stay fit. You know, all of them seem to be getting injuries and none of them seem to be able to get a run of games and stay playing. They're so young. You know, the three of those we're talking about, the three have been injured and, you'd like them to get, 35, 40 games a season under belt and become proper professionals, you know, not just dipping in and out every few weeks and putting in one good performance and not being seen again for a while, to have a proper couple of seasons. It's hard to be an international footballer if you're not playing at your club or not playing more than a couple of games and then not being seen again.
I wonder as well with Shane Duffy, what the thought process is going to be for Stephen Kenny, because, Duffy had a bit of a nightmare for the second Celtic goal at the weekend when they were beaten by St Mirren. He hasn't been playing well since going to Scotland, really, after the first two or three games that he was there. You know, we've explained a few times that it was difficult for Duffy. He lost his dad around the time that he was moving. It was a big upheaval going from Brighton to Glasgow at the time. And then Celtic haven't been playing well this season, which hasn't helped him. But he's in a real funk of form now at the moment. And you have to wonder if it's a case of, despite him never really having a poor game for Ireland, that he might well lose his place for these qualifiers just based on his club form.
Yeah, I think it's an easier decision now for Stephen not to play him. You know, if he plays them and he doesn't play well, it really bounce back on Stephen. It's hard to pick him, to be honest. As good as he's been for Ireland, that's months ago now. It was really under Mick McCarthy, I suppose. And we did a piece with him for TV for one of the Ireland games. I don't know if it actually went out. I think it might have been pulled after. But we were doing a piece on how he's a very good player, really good centre-half, Shane, when the team he's playing for is sitting deep and his last ditch and everyone's behind the ball and he's blocking and he's making tackles and he's heading it. But when you're asking him to be higher up the pitch and hold a higher line and like Celtic will do now and be the ones on the ball more most of the time, instead higher up the pitch, have more possession, balls over the top, then you're having to turn and run back instead of facing everything when you're sitting deep and you're in a team who's defending for their lives, which Brighton would have been under Chris Hughton. A lot of the time would have sit very deep and it would have suited Shane and he looked the part and he's fantastic, I think, in that sort of organised setup. I think... And every player is different. Every player's weakness and positive. I think his weakness is, a team who has more possession, higher up the pitch. And Stephen Kenny plays more like that. They will be higher up the pitch. They will try to play from back and have more possession. So that side of the thing won't suit him for him as well. Mick McCarthy suited him better, I think. Martin O'Neill suited him better. You're sitting a bit deeper. You're getting everyone behind the ball a lot more. While the run of form he's in hasn't been good, I don't think the style of play that Celtic would have suited him 100%.
Yeah, it's one of those ones for Stephen Kenny now. He probably has to just monitor the fitness of Kieran Clark, who's now getting some football for Newcastle again. Collins has been playing well in the Championship. And then you look at John Egan with Sheffield United back into a little bit of form currently. Maybe he can play himself back in. And that makes the decision that bit easier if he decides then to pair, say, Clark and Egan, if they're both playing regular Premier League football at the same time. Might just round back up to the big game this weekend with Man City, because I've been really impressed by Man City, Kevin, over the last while. 13 Premier League games in a row that they've won now. They've just been very nicely going about their business. They haven't been hammering teams, maybe like they would have done 2 years ago, but they've now got a defence that's rock solid with Ruben Diaz in it. John Stones is playing better as a result too. And it looks pretty ominous for the rest of the Premier League with the way Man City are going currently.
Yeah, it does. Games in hand. The strongest squad. I did one of the games for TV that played West Brom, right at the end of their bad spell. And West Brom beat him, or it was nil. It was a draw, or West Brom beat him. And you just thought that's the end of Man City's title challenge this season. But since then, as you said, they've gone, I think straight after that game, they've gone on that unbeaten run. And they're looking to play really well. At the time, they couldn't score. They had loads of possession in that game, I remember. They didn't score. And no one really was in that six-yard box tapping in. Watching the game last night, Raheem Sterling's goal. Not his performance. His performance was really good, but just his goal. He just ran into the six-yard box and tapped it in. They've been really missing Aguero. Someone, Jesus scored as well last night. And he was doing everything other than being in the six-yard box and scoring goals up to this run of form. It really looks like they've worked on it, that they've been spoken to, that they need... No, they create so many chances, but everyone wants to be on the ball out or in the box, out wide, dribbling, taking people on, having shots. No one wanted to do what Aguero did. The hardest thing in the world, put the ball in the back of the net. And just looking at them last night, they really seemed to be focused on, you know, getting people into that 6-yard box to try just tap the ball in, because they create chances like that. I thought they'd sign a centre forward. You know, Aguero, you know, you can't, again, talking about fitness and players, he can't seem to get a good run, he can't seem to get back. And he's such an important player for them, because there's so many good players to create chances, and he's just happy to just sit in that box and tap them in, score good goals for them, score a lot of goals every season. So I did think they'd sign a striker, but looking at how they played last night, they seem to have got the bit between their teeth and you know, players making those sort of runs now to score goals. So, yeah, I can't see anyone winning the league, only them now.
Yeah, huge game this Sunday. It is live and off the ball. Give us a prediction, Kevin. Who's going to win City and Liverpool at Anfield?
I think Liverpool will have a really good go. I do. I think, you know, they'll be hurt by that last night in the criticism, and they are the champions. But I think Man City will have too much for them. I'll go for a 2-1 Man City win.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural protein-powered chicken bites.